So when we were talking about glasses, we were talking about people who played sport in glasses, in particular football. And Len from Hyde Park reminds us, I was four at the time, so forgive me for forgetting. But he talks about Neville Walters, who played with glasses. Neville Walters played for a club called Addington, and in 1963, they won, I think, an unprecedented treble, League, Castle Cup, and Champ of Champs trophy, if I'm not mistaken. That's the information I'm getting online. So Neville Walters, and then from Kay, reminder of another football legend, Rata Greaves Mokgwatleng, played for Orlando Pirates with glasses, presently is a judge of the High Court. And Rata Mokgwatleng, Judge Mokgwatleng, I suppose I should call him, then went on, together with Kaiser Motaung and others, to found Kaiser Chiefs. So a huge part of South African football history. Both men, both did it in specs.
John Perlman on 702, 3 to 6 p.m.
Now, there's been a lot of focus on 53 men who, men and women, I should say, who appeared in court charged with holding ministers hostage, described as military veterans. But a story's about to come out in the Daily Maverick newspaper over the weekend, which suggests that the records of these individuals need a great deal more scrutiny, both their records in the current years, but also their claims to have been part of the anti-apartheid military struggle. Rebecca Davis is the author of that story, journalist at Daily Maverick, and she joins us now on 702 Drive. Rebecca, welcome, and thanks very much for your time. Well, first of all, let's deal with information that came out in court. You highlight that at the top of your story. What's important about what the court heard?
What's important, John, is that this week we heard that of the 53 military veterans who took the ministers hostage, just 13 do not have any criminal record. Of the rest, 29 have what they call minor previous convictions, and 11 have really serious criminal histories. So we're dealing with a fairly staggering percentage of them being kind of well-known to courtrooms around South Africa, which in itself is a bit of an eye-opener. And I should say, John, that the vets themselves make no bones about this. They say, however, that they have been forced into lives of crime by the fact that the post-apartheid government has neglected them, which, of course, is an excuse that could be used by, I would argue, pretty much everyone in post-apartheid South Africa who finds themselves, you know, poor, under-resourced, etc. So perhaps not a line that I think authorities should give too much credit to.
So talk us through the group, because the group has an umbrella format, maybe I'm using the wrong word, but it does encompass people from different political traditions and different strands of the armed struggle, the liberation struggle, war veterans. This is a group which emerged in late 2020 to lobby for these benefits. But before we talk about who they are and the questions you raise, it would seem they have a genuine set of grievances, or let me frame it differently. There is a set of grievances which it would seem clear, would you agree, that the state has not addressed?
Well, even that is not quite clear cut. I mean, the Military Veterans Act of 2011 does actually make provision for some, in some ways, quite generous benefits for military vets who have been certified by the department's own investigators. For instance, not many people know that veterans get preferential treatment for government tenders, and I've witnessed this in the Western Cape to do with farming projects, for instance, where a lot of military veterans are set up quite nicely with that. And they are also supposed to be given preferential access to housing and so on. The difficulty, I suppose, is with kind of the basic service delivery that all of us struggle with in South Africa, which is to say, you know, those houses aren't necessarily being delivered at speed, but were they to arrive, a veteran should hypothetically be at the top of the list. So, yes, I mean, it is clear that many of them are impoverished. They were going through the salaries per month. These are very low-income people. The question is whether it's legitimate that their grievances are that much more legitimate, put it that way, than those of South Africa who did not take up arms during apartheid.
So Rebecca, I mean, one of the things that came out in court was the ages of the people who were standing in the dock and charged in this way. And questions have certainly been asked on this show by listeners about saying, well, those people look too young to be veterans. That, of course, is a superficial conclusion. What does the list of people charged and their ages tell us, though, about that issue?
So the ages do pretty much add up. The youngest, I should say, is 43, mm-hmm. which would mean that they were 15 years old when the process of demobilization and integration began. And I think, John, just necessary to quickly clarify what happened here. So during apartheid, you had all these liberation armies, for want of a better word. You had Mkhonto we Sizwe with the ANC. You had APLA, which was the Azanian People's Liberation Army. And then you had a different Azanian Liberation Army, Azanla. And what happened is that the democratic government decided to try and combine all these forces into a post-democratic army. If they people wanted to continue with military service,
right.
they could do that. That was the choice. Either you could be integrated in the newly formed SANDF, or you could be demobilized. And what happened in demobilization is that if you arrived there and were checked off, then you were given a payment, which was commensurate with your length of service and the kind of contribution you'd made to the struggle. So if you'd contributed years and years, John, obviously you were given
yes.
a greater amount of a stipend or gratuity. So these people who are arriving now saying that they were 15 in 1993, yes, it is plausible that they could have played a part.
Yes.
Because in the last few years, in the early 90s in particular, these groups like APLA and the ZANLA, et cetera, were recruiting thousands of young new members to form part of what they called these self-defense units, right? But the point is that they would have played a really kind of minimal role as it was. They would have been present for a year or two, maybe 3 years
right.
of the struggle. And as such, even if they had arrived at the time to get their gratuity, which they said they didn't, they would have been given very little money as it was, because
yes.
that's just simply how the system works.
So you talk about membership and credentials, if I put it broadly, being verified by investigators from the Department of Military Veterans to make these determinations both on eligibility first and secondly quantum. Do you have any sense as to whether that process works as effectively as it should?
I mean, it obviously didn't, and that's partly due to apartheid chaotic record keeping and among the liberation struggles as well, chaotic record keeping. Some people went under special combat names and they couldn't be traced, and others simply disappeared and they couldn't be recorded. But I do think it's fair to say, John, that the government has made a strenuous effort to try to track down and reward those veterans who deserved it. So it wasn't the case that if you missed out in demobilization in 1996, then that was it for you.
Yes.
Over the years, up until 2002, there were still attempts made over the years. And then when the Department of Military Veterans was established in 2011, there were renewed efforts. And in fact, their criteria for getting veterans benefits was less rigorous than it had been originally. So it is untrue to say that there haven't been efforts made to track these
yes.
veterans. And it's totally unclear to me why this particular cohort is so adamant that no attempt has been made, for instance, to find them.
Rebecca Davis, journalist, author at Daily Maverick. It's a deep look into some of the issues and some of the facts, many of them contested, around the military veterans who were the focus of a court case this week and a hostage-taking moment, I think, last Friday, today a week ago. DM 168 coming out over the weekend. You can have a closer read of what she's written by picking that up.